The Sad Story of East Perusha, taken from holocaustianity.com. Kill, kill, in the German race there is nothing but evil. Stamp out the fascist beast once and for all in its lair. Use force and break the racial pride of these German women. Take them as your lawful booty. Kill as you storm forward. Kill, you gallant soldiers of the Red Army. That was by Ilya Ehrenberg. And now we'll give a brief background to Perusha. In August 1944, news got out that in the East Perusian villages of Nemsdorf and Goldap, the Red Army had raped, tortured and murdered all of the inhabitants down to the last baby. In Nemsdorf, reporters from Switzerland and Sweden were present when the grisly atrocities were uncovered. In barns, houses and sheds where the Red Army had discovered civilians hiding, they had not only machine-gunned them down, but had thrown hand grenades also into the groups. 95 German civilians were murdered in this bestial fashion in the Nemsdorf area of Schulzenwald. This scene soon played out in West Perusia, Pomerania, Silesia, the Sudetenland, and the other areas of Eastern Europe. The Red Army was cajoled to behave in Germany, as Mongolian hordes of old, by Stalin's propagandists, among whom was the Grand Master of Hate, Ilya Ehrenberg, who encouraged troops to injure, torture, rape and kill all German civilians. As the violence spread, the only option for the endangered East Perusians was to flee, and they would face uncounted scenes of terror. In an article of March the 3rd, 1945, Ehrenberg emphasised that the historical mission of the Soviet army consists in a modest and honourable task of reduction of the population of Germany. Ehrenberg whipped the Red Army into such a pathological fury of hatred that by the time they arrived in East Perusia, it was easy to rape and kill the mostly female population. There are reports of young women in East Perusia having been crucified on barn doors, tied up by their legs and torn in two by cars, or groups of naked girls being tied to a rope like fish on a line and dragged behind wagons, or of small groups of children being found with their tongues nailed to tables, and lifeless babies discovered with their skulls broken and bodies punctured by bayonets. It is said that every captured woman between 8 and 80 was violently raped, most multiple times, and many were killed after. Quote, "The Germans are not human beings. From now on, the word German is for us the worst imaginable curse, and strikes us to the quick. We shall not get excited, we shall kill. If you have not killed at least one German a day, you have wasted that day. For us, there is nothing more joyful than a heap of German corpses." Close quote. Ilya Ehrenberg again. In the winter of 1945, East Perusia was cut off from the West, the only escape route for many being from the small port of Pillau and over the Baltic Sea towards the West. Throngs of desperate Königsberg civilians had only one way out, a frigid walk over half-frozen lagoons to Frischneerang, a narrow slice of land from where they hoped to reach Danzig. Almost 1 million people are said to have tried this perilous crossing. Survivors later recounted the hopelessness and horror of making this deadly trek in the dark, as whole families pulled carts and sleds filled with children and the elderly, slid into holes in the ice and plunged into the unforgiving sea. In daylight, Soviet planes circled overhead and intentionally cut off large ice floes with artillery fire, sending them hopelessly adrift. Those who escaped on land joined an endless parade of stunned, bereaved people on overflowing roadways. They witnessed whole cartloads of people crushed and mowed over by advancing Russian tanks, with wailing children and frantic mothers stretched for mile upon mile of human misery. Unprepared for the 60 degrees below zero, wind chill and deep snow, some turned back home in despair. Blazing farms lit up the horizon, burned by the Red Army, or set on fire by hopeless owners who then committed suicide. This was the orderly and humane expulsion of Germans that Churchill, Roosevelt and Stalin shook hands to. More than 1.9 million of nearly 2.4 million East Prussians, joined by Germans from central Poland, fled westward under these horrible conditions. 173,000 people could not or would not leave. Later, researchers at the Federal Archives counted 3,300 locations just in areas they had access to, where at least 120,000 German civilians were either shot or beaten to death by the Red Army. Quote, "The German good fellows, those who at home give way to sentimentalities, piggybacks to their kiddies, and feed the German cats with morsels of their rationed hamburgers, murder Russian children with the same pedantry as do the bad Germans. They murder because they have come to believe that only people with German blood are worthy of living on this earth of ours." Close quote. Ehrenberg again. The Germans initiated Operation Hannibal to withdraw German civilians and troops from East Prussia. Beginning on January 21, 1945, it ended up being one of the largest emergency evacuations by sea in history and one of the German Navy's most significant achievements. In a period of about 15 weeks, between 500 and 1,080 merchant vessels of all types and numerous naval craft, including Germany's largest remaining naval units, transported about 900,000 refugees and 350,000 soldiers across the Baltic Sea to Germany and occupied Denmark, but not all rescues were successful. The Wilhelm Gustloff was a 25,000-ton passenger liner. On January the 30th, 1945, when it steamed out of Gottenhaven, it carried a crew of 1,100 officers and men, 73 critically wounded soldiers, 373 young women of the Women's Naval Auxiliary, and more than 6,000 desperate refugees, most of them women and children, who had reached the safety of the ship after grueling personal ordeals. The Gustloff was 13 miles off the coast of Pomerania when three torpedoes from a Soviet sub under the command of Captain A.I. Marinesco struck the ship. 90 minutes later, it sank under the icy waves of the Baltic. Barely 1,100 survived. At least 7,000 Germans died. A few days later, on February the 10th, Marinesco struck again and sank the German hospital ship, the General von Steuben, carrying 3,500 wounded soldiers and another 1,000 refugees. Only 650 people survived. Hailed as a hero, despite a record of drunkenness and desertion, Marinesco was later awarded the Combat Order of the Red Banner for his record in sinking the most tonnage in a single cruise. He would later be demoted for other offences, and he died in prison. On May the 6th, 1945, the German freighter Goya, also a part of the rescue fleet, was torpedoed by another Soviet submarine, and more than 6,000 non-combatant refugees fleeing from East Prussia also died. By February of 1945, thousands upon thousands of panic-stricken refugees who managed to survive the grueling exodus from the eastern regions flooded into Dresden and other towns and cities seeking shelter and help. On the 14th and the 15th of February, Dresden was incinerated. Virtually every city that refugees were known to have flocked to, from Kiel to Schweinmund, suffered from major catastrophic Allied bombing attacks as part of Operation Thunderclap and Operation Clarion at the height of their exodus. Two Allied air raids were carried out on the old city of Königsberg on August the 26th and 27th, and August the 29th and 30th, 1944, based on misinformation from Churchill that it was a modernised, heavily defended fortress. 90% of the city of Kant was absolutely destroyed, and it burned for several days. The entire historic city centre, including the cathedral, the castle, the old churches, the old and the new universities, and the old shipping quarter were entirely destroyed. After the Red Army's capture of Königsberg under General Czerniakowski, the wreckage of the city was cordoned off and turned into a giant internment camp, then a mass grave. The Red Army immediately and methodically set about erasing any trace of former German presence, starting with the human beings who did not or could not get out in time. Out of Königsberg's pre-war population of 316,000, an estimated 50,000 to 75,000 people were still present in the ruins of the devastated city on the day of capitulation, and thousands did not survive the communist orgy of bloodshed and revenge. Many that did survive murder soon met their end by starvation, disease, and freezing to death. Probably no other German city paid so cruel a price for defeat. 90,000 German military prisoners were also taken, almost none of whom were ever heard from again. During January and February of 1945, the evacuation of surviving Germans began, including those who had returned to reunite with or save their families. Almost 2 years later, in October of 1947, there were still 30,000 Germans in the city, and they were shipped by trains to the former GDR or sent to the Soviet gulags. In February of 1948, the Ministerial Council of the USSR decided to resettle all the remaining Germans they discovered in East Prussia to the GDR, officially declaring them illegal residents. According to Soviet sources, 102,125 persons were resettled to the GDR in 1947 and 1948, but only 99,481 arrived. GDR authorities attributed this to perhaps a Soviet calculation error. In May 1951, another 3,000 East Prussians were shipped to the GDR. These last remaining German residents were expelled in more ethnic cleansing in 1949-50. Thousands totally vanished and are presumed murdered. German cities and towns were neglected or demolished, and the place names all changed. Königsberg, founded in 1255, was renamed Karlingrad in honour of a murderous Soviet thug who never stepped foot in the city. In July of 1945, northern East Prussia became a part of the USSR, and in the autumn, the first Soviet settlers arrived from Russia, Belarus, and the Ukraine. The city of Kant was doomed, and the beauty that had come with wisdom, age, and grace was to be poorly remodelled. The 800-year-old Königsberg Castle was dynamited to make way for the hideous 22-storey House of Soviets. However, the castle had contained many underground tunnels, and the buildings above began to slowly collapse. Because of Karlingrad's use as a navy base, there was nuclear pollution, and the city bore grave contamination from the Chernobyl disaster. Its streets are crime and drug-infested, filthy and stinking, and it has one of the world's highest rates of AIDS. The German inhabitants who settled these deserted, plague and famine-devastated lands and made the area their home for centuries, working the land, raising their families and building canals, villages, homes, schools, churches and businesses, were brutally driven into exile with their farms and properties all stolen by force. They are referred to in contemporary Russian and Polish travel guides as the German invaders. Any evidence of the region's long Germanic heritage was carefully obliterated. Russia even claims the great German philosopher Kant as one of their own. In the late 1980s, some ethnic Germans arrived, most driven out of other parts of the USSR, and by 1991, 5,000 ethnic Germans inhabited the city and 13,000 the region. Closed off to foreigners since World War II, the Kaliningrad region, about one half the size of Belgium and some 200 miles away from the border of Russia proper, was reopened on January 1, 1991, when the first direct train since 1945 ran from Kaliningrad to Berlin. After the fall of the USSR, when neighbouring Lithuania and former Soviet republics gained their independence, Kaliningrad had been cut off from Russia. Although railroads connect Kaliningrad to Russia through Lithuania and Belarus, high tariffs in Lithuania make importing food and supplies from Russia prohibitively expensive. Kaliningrad was declared a free economic zone in 1992 in a futile attempt to revive the economy. It never developed into a Hong Kong of the Baltic, as some desired, and corruption keeps most investment away. Approximately 400,000 people live in metropolitan Kaliningrad, and a total of 1 million are in the oblast, but not those people who bravely settled the land hundreds of years ago. The name Purusha was formally expunged from international language by Order No. 46 of the Allied Control Commission on February the 23rd, 1945, because, as it incorrectly stated, quote, "since time immemorial it has been the pillar of militarism and reaction in Germany," close quote. Lost in this heroic rhetoric was the fact that Purusha was also the pillar of historical religious tolerance lacking in its European neighbours, and a pillar of hospitality in its offering of a new, free, undiscriminating homeland for persecuted refugees from Scotland, France, Austria and elsewhere throughout its history. Purusha was also a pillar of musical genius, the arts, science, philosophy and medicine. Purusha, as a state, was far less aggressive and warlike than Britain, France or Russia, and certainly less adept at gobbling large areas of the earth and subjugating native populations by enforcing bloodthirsty colonial rule on anywhere near the scale of her neighbours. Purusha's history did not include murderous suppression of minorities, profiteering from slave trading or using hunger blockades and enforced famine to inhumanely starve out its enemies. Nor did Purusha ever encourage the exile, rape or burning alive of millions of women and children non-combatants in wartime.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
Pomerania and Danzig. In the windswept courtyards of the Stettiner Bahnhof, a cohort of German refugees, part of 12 million and 19 million dispossessed in East Purusha and Silesia, sat in groups under a driving rain and told the story of their miserable pilgrimage, during which more than 25% died by the roadside, and the remainder were so starved that they scarcely had the strength to walk. And that was taken from the New York Daily News correspondent, Donald Mackenzie, written in 1945. Now we'll give a background of Pomerania. Except for the easternmost districts, which were in ancient times partly Polish and where a small Polish-speaking minority remained, Pomerania was German for almost all of modern history. It remained part of Germany after World War I, but minor adjustments to the Polish border were made by the victorious Allies so as to create discord by favouring Polish trade and preventing growth or success of the German economy. From 1919 to 1939, it was contentiously divided among Germany, Poland and the Free City of Danzig, which the victorious Allies of World War I had recreated so it could become a Polish military transit depot. Germany took it back in World War II, but with German defeat in 1945, the situation reversed. The civilian inhabitants of Pomerania would be the ones made to pay. In the German province of Pomerania, there were at least 440,000 dead, not counting many refugees and children, out of 1,895,000 inhabitants that had been living there in December 1944. Throughout April of 1945, the Second Belarusian Front advanced through western Pomerania in a merciless rampage that inflicted indescribable anguish and atrocities on the German population. Demmin and Greifswald surrendered on April the 30th. Demmin was a small settlement for a long time before it was resettled by Germans and the Flemish in the 12th to 14th centuries. Demmin and its surrounding areas remained rural and agricultural, even though Demmin had been a member of the Hanseatic League because of the rivers connecting this area to the Baltic. On May the 1st, 1945, Soviet soldiers set fire to the city centre of Demmin and prevented the inhabitants from extinguishing the blaze. Of the historic buildings around the marketplace, only a steeple survived the inferno. 365 houses, or 70% of the city, lay in ruins. 900 residents of the town, or roughly 5% of the entire population, had already committed mass suicide in fear of the advancing Red Army. Coroner's lists show that most drowned in the nearby River Talense and River Peene, whereas others poisoned themselves. However, differentiating between homicide and suicide is sometimes difficult. Vast areas of Further Pomerania were vacated as the population fled, and whole towns nearly emptied. In other areas, Pomeranians, as well as other German refugees, were stranded with nowhere to go. Once captive, the physically fit were forced to participate in degrading work, such as the transportation of Soviet war loot, and cleaning up wartime destruction, for which they were paid little or no salary. The Polish army deported 110,000 Germans from the areas adjacent to the eastern bank of the Oder River in Further Pomerania in 2 weeks of June 1945. Many German civilians were deported to labour camps like Vorkuta in the Soviet Union, where a large number of them perished or were later reported missing. The remaining Germans were expelled from the now Polish areas of Pomerania. Expellees were not allowed to carry household articles with them and were often robbed of the few items they managed to take with them. The major staging area from which the Germans deployed to post-war Germany was the Stettin-Schön railway station, where gangs were free to raid, rape and loot the expellees. Germans were either transported by ship from Stettin to Lübeck or sent by rail in cattle cars to the British occupation zone. Between November the 20th and December the 21st, 1945, some 290,000 Germans were exiled. On July the 27th, 1945, a boatload of refugees from Pomerania arrived in Berlin. Of the 300 children hastily crammed on board by the area's new occupants, over half were dead. The occupiers decided to expel all of the German residents of the local hospitals in one case, with no consideration at all of their conditions. The pitiful masses were crammed into freight cars and sent west. Exposed and without adequate food and water, almost all died. From February 1946 to October 1947, another major wave of expulsion took place, during which 760,000 more Germans were expelled and thousands more perished. The population of Mecklenburg-Vorpommern had doubled towards the end of the war, with more than 40% of the population being refugees. Before the war, Mecklenburg and Western Pomerania had a population of 1,278,700, of whom many died in the war or moved west as the Red Army advanced. In October 1945, the authorities counted 820,000 refugees in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, up to 40,000 of whom moved about aimlessly. Before the war, the part of Vorpommern that would remain German was inhabited by about 500,000 people. After the war, 85,000 of these were either dead, had fled, or were imprisoned. In 1946, the influx of 305,000 refugees raised the population to 719,000. In 1946, refugees made up for 42.4% of the Vorpommern population. in Stralsund and Grimmen counties, half of the population were refugees. More than half of the refugees in Vorpommern were expellees from the former eastern parts of the province of Pomerania. The other ones were from other former eastern territories. In 1947, some 1,426,000 refugees were counted in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, 1 million of whom were from post-war Poland. In 1949, out of Mecklenburg-Vorpommern's population of 2,126,000, refugees accounted for 922,088. From the time of the Soviet conquest of further Pomerania to the subsequent expulsions of Germans until 1950, 498,000 people from the part of the province east of the Oder-Neisse line died, making up 26.4% of the former population. Of the 498,000 dead, 375,000 were civilians and 123,000 were former German soldiers. There were at least 1 million expellees from the then Polish part of the province in 1945 and the following years, not counting many refugees and children. In size, only a fifth of the province remained with Germany. The historical capital of Prussian Pomerania, which stretched almost to Danzig, was stately intellectual Stettin. A fortress as early as the 12th century until 1637, Stettin was the home of the Dukes of Pomerania, an important member of the Hanseatic League. At the Peace of Westphalia in 1648, it passed to Sweden, but was ceded back to Prussia in 1720. The construction of a canal to Berlin in 1914 enriched Stettin. During World War II, Stettin suffered heavy damage from repeated Allied bombings. Originally, Germany was to retain Stettin, while the Poles were to annex East Prussia with Königsberg. However, Stalin eventually decided that he wanted Königsberg as a year-round warm water port for the Soviet Navy, and argued that the Poles should receive Stettin instead. Again, Stalin got his wish. The predominantly German population was expelled after centuries of their presence and replaced by Poles who were trucked in to replace them. In the fall of 1945, 230,000 Poles had settled in the Szczecin Voivodeship, the Stettin area, and more than 400,000 Germans remained. By the spring of 1946, Polish and German populations were about equal in size. By the end of 1947, 900,000 Poles and 59,000 Germans still lived there. The Polish and Soviet governments encouraged Poles from elsewhere to relocate and replace the former German population. The majority was more than 500,000 settlers from central Poland in 1950. About 47,000 Poles from other European countries were repatriated as well. 26% of the population, or up to 2 million Poles, who were expelled from their homelands east of the new Polish-Soviet border, also settled in the new Western territories. Large numbers of Ukrainians and Belarusians relocated under a 1947 Polish government operation aimed at population dispersal. The scattering of members of non-Polish ethnic groups throughout the country to erase their unique ethnic identities. 53,000 people were forced to settle in the Szczecin Voivodeship in 1947, and since the 1950s, Greeks, Macedonians and Gypsies settled there. Largely excerpted from the expulsions of Germans were the Autochtons, close to 3 million ethnically Slavic inhabitants of Pomerania, the Kashubians and Slovensians, many of whom did not ever identify with Polish nationality. The Polish government used them for propaganda, as their presence on former German soil was used to prove the Polishness of the area and justify its incorporation into the Polish state as recovered territories. verification and national rehabilitation committees were set up to prove dormant Polishness and to determine who was redeemable as a Polish citizen. Even after passing, the autochthons were subjected to discrimination and degradation, such as having their surnames Polonized. The international legal status of the stolen territories was still uncertain at the end of the war, and there was room for differing interpretations even after the Potsdam Agreement. Therefore, the remaining German population and centuries of evidence of the German culture and presence, which marked the area as German rather than the propagandist's portrayal of ancient Polish territory, had to be quickly erased. The Polish administration set up a Ministry for the Recovered Territories with a Bureau for Repatriation to supervise and organize the expulsions and resettlements. All German place names were replaced with Polish or medieval Slavic ones. If no Slavic name existed, then either the German name was translated or Polish was assigned. The German language was banned, and there was a momentous campaign to demolish German monuments, graveyards and buildings. Objects of German art were scattered. Protestant churches were either converted into Catholic ones or put to other use. Meanwhile, to inspire solidarity in the movement of cultural erasure, the government spread anti-German propaganda. All past or present German property was declared abandoned as of May 1945, and it became state property in March 1946. The Germans who were not yet expelled had the legal status of a troublesome foreigner temporarily in Poland, and they were not allowed to have any communications devices like telephones or radios, and their movements were restricted. By the end of 1945, between 120,000 and 150,000 Germans were legally employed, mostly in farming or fishing. In the summer of 1946, there were 78,000 Germans being used on large farms, and they formed about 90% of the employees of Polish state estates. They were employed primarily because they had no legal protection and could be abused, required to do illegal work, and could be forced to work hard for food alone. In April 1946, the Polish authorities limited the daily work to 10 hours and nominally adapted the Polish wages for German workers, only to subtract 25% for a reconstruction of the country and social purposes. In March of 1947, the Polish authorities in Dramberg leased out the local Germans to Polish farmers for free slave labour.